You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Friday edition of the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to cover two stories. One is the jobs report that came out this morning, I think 8:30 Eastern Time in Washington, D.C. And then I'm going to talk about our president's reaction to the mass shooting in Oregon at a community college. As you're probably aware, I'm sitting in a dangerous place. I'm on a college campus, a community college campus, that also happens to be a gun-free zone. In a year, if we're lucky, because of the Texas legislature has passed a law that would allow students, faculty, staff, anyone with a concealed carry permit to bring it on campus. Now, I've been coming to this campus for many years, on and off, and there have been changes over the years. One is we have a rather extensive system of surveillance cameras. That might give some people a sense of comfort. It doesn't for me, for the simple reason I was in the business. And yes, we would sell the cameras and the recorders that went with them, and usually a monitor if you had the luxury of having someone watching the various cameras. But that's the weakness. It's really after the fact that these surveillance cameras, and most of them on this campus are concealed, although we have many that you know that are visible, those round domes that you see in your grocery stores and other places, especially usually in retail stores on the outside and inside of the store. Now, what are they used for? Primarily deterrence. Oh, yes, they probably have a person looking for people shoplifting, but it's deterrence, and that's what's important. I know that unless you're lucky and just by happenstance are looking at the camera view of someone, for example, at shoplifting, your chances of really spotting one are slim or none. And the same applies for people with guns. The problem with gun-free zones, and I'm going to get into this in more detail, is it paints a big target on the people that go to that institution, the law-abiding people, the students, the faculty, and staff, because it tells the shooters that most of the people are unarmed. And that's a true statement. And even if the shooter knows that their cameras, that as far as I'm concerned are next to useless in preventing it, although it does have a small deterrent effect, I'm on a campus that has a number of campus police. But if you're going to rely on them to respond quickly, it's going to take at least 3 to 5 minutes. And by then you could have 10, 20, 30 people killed if you have a determined shooter. And that's why where you have concealed carry and allow citizens to carry the gun, and it's their choice, you don't have to carry a gun. And if you're going to have concealed carry, you got to go through a background check. And most of the people, I won't say all, but virtually all the people that have this are law-abiding citizens. Many of them practice their shooting, and they're using it for their protection. And that's what we need, because as a result of more and more states, virtually all the states today have to various degrees concealed carry, violent crimes and homicides are way down, except for gun-free zones. So I'm going to get into not the details of this mass shooting, because I have covered at least half, well, I don't know the exact count, but 3 or 4 at least, if not more, of these shootings. I can remember rather distinctly the very first radio show that I did here, and unfortunately I don't have a copy of it anymore, it was overwritten, was on the very day that there was a mass shooting, or what looked like an attempted mass shooting, at the University of Texas. You've probably forgotten about it. I didn't forget about it. But what was interesting, two things were interesting. The mass shooter didn't kill anyone. He committed suicide. And that's one of the common denominators of these mass shooters. They plan it out, but their ultimate goal is suicide. Either they're going to commit suicide or have the police kill them. And they want to get the attention by killing other people. So the cops will come, and they're hoping to be killed. So I'm going to get into the president's reaction to this. And the president has a well-deserved reputation for being a gun grabber. If it was up to him, he would do away with your and my Second Amendment right to bear and keep arms. And that's why he appointed, for example, his previous Attorney General, Eric Holder, another gun grabber. And what upsets me, and it doesn't surprise me, though, upset's the wrong word. I totally expect this president to lie, and he did it yesterday. He politicized a tragedy, and he did it deliberately early before we really know the details of who this killer is and what the background is, to try to advance his own political agenda. And the American people are sick and tired of this president lying to them. And I'm going to play his, not all of it, but a good portion of that speech he made in the White House. He couldn't wait to get out there and have an emotional appeal. He can't have a logical appeal because the evidence refutes what he's saying. Where you ban guns and have gun-free zones, violent crimes, homicides go up. And that's in this country and other countries as well. In other words, gun bans where you have the toughest laws simply don't work. Because criminals and suicidal maniacs or homicidal maniacs, they don't care about gun laws. They're out to kill people or get themselves killed in the process. So those will be the two stories. I'm first going to go over, though, the unemployment or jobs report. And this was a rather weak one. Economists were expecting 200,000 non-farm payroll jobs to be created in September, well, only 142,000 were. And for those that are new to the jobs report, the Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics, every month conducts surveys. They do two surveys, the household survey and from the household survey, and that's of about 60,000 households, you get the unemployment rate. They also do an establishment survey of employers, both businesses and governments, a much larger sample in the hundreds of thousands, and they do change the businesses that they sample. And from that, they get the non-farm payroll number, and they do this monthly. And the number jumps around. It also is adjusted both up and down as they get better information and correct any mistakes they might make. Now, the unemployment rate stayed the same. The problem is, and where the news is not in the unemployment rate. The news is in the low number of jobs that were created, 142,000 in September. And that's going to be revised. It could go up or down. I have no idea. It's very much, I've seen it go both ways, and I've seen, in some months, significant increases. Now, the prior months, July and August, they also revised that down. I believe the number is 59,000 is the number I recollect. But what I have, for those that are new listeners, and I need to say this, I have a companion blog for my show called prankpops.wordpress.com. And that's prankpops, prankpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have a photograph of me in the studio. Right below it, you'll have links to my most recent 60 to 80 shows. Below that, you'll have information, my show prep notes. And I usually have a lot more information, but I was somewhat pressed for time. But I have videos as well as some good articles on the jobs report, trying to put it in context. And I also have reproduced, copied the Bureau of Labor Statistics, their press release, as well as tables 1 and 2. They literally have dozens of tables, and it's a very, very good website. And usually what I do is have, and I'll do this probably Saturday or Sunday, normally what I do is I go through some of the key statistics, and I show you both the number as well as a graph so you can get an idea of the trend from usually year 2000 to date. Because what needs to be said is what's important here is the trend. No single month, I don't care if it's unemployment rates or real GDP numbers, whatever, you can't really go by a month. You want to look for the trend, averaging, if you will, over a year or 2 years to get really a sense of what's going on. Now, there's been some reaction to this, given that the job report is weak. Whether the Federal Reserve is going to pull the trigger in October, November, December in terms of raising the interest rate. I think they want to raise the interest rate, but are incapable of doing it. And this will probably delay it. And when I say the interest rate, I'm talking about the federal funds target rate for, you can't get this number, by the way. I've had people ask me this. This is the overnight interest rates that banks charge other banks to loan them money so they can meet their reserve requirements. And they've had it at 25 basis point has been the target since December of 2008. So this December will be the seventh year. That's rather unconventional monetary policy. I agree with Milton Friedman. The Federal Reserve needs to be abolished. Now, that's not going to happen, and I realize that. But we have a bunch of PhDs, doctorates, primarily in economics, some in statistics, that think they're smarter than the market. Well, if they're realistic and honest with themselves, they know they're not. There is knowledge in the market, but it's spread over billions of people. And it's a very dynamic situation. People are changing their preferences, changing the decisions that they would make literally every second. So to think that a small committee, in this case, the Federal Reserve Board, is going to be able to predict what the market interest rate should be is rather naive. And it's rather going against their own education. The reason why that rate is important, though, even though it's really for setting a rate for banks so they can loan or borrow money, is you have what's called a term interest structure of interest rates. And that factors in the time dimension or the time to maturity if it's debt. And what I'm driving at is this. Other interest rates look at what the Fed rate is, both short-term, intermediate, and long-term. So a lot of interest rates are factored off as a way to look at it, what that federal funds rate is. The problem is, because of the interference, government intervention into this market by the Federal Reserve, interest rates are suppressed by probably at least 200 to 300 basis points. That's 2% or 3%. I don't know what the rate should be, but I know it's not 25 basis points. The federal funds rate has been a lot higher for many, many, many years. This is the first time it's been near zero, and that's the other description you'll hear, near zero interest rate. I'm mentioning this with the jobs report because I think it's this jobs report combined with October's jobs report and probably most likely November's jobs report before the Fed makes a move. Because if this jobs report, let's say, is adjusted downwards, not upwards, and then we have a subsequent jobs number similar to this in November and December, I think the Fed is going to be hard-pressed to increase interest rates. Now, I'm bringing this up for a reason. Through September, retail sales don't look good. They're still positive, but they're way down. And the fear is this could extend into the holiday season, Thanksgiving and Christmas, where most retail stores do the vast majority of their sales. Now, I understand the sales of cars have been very good up in September. So apparently there are some jobs selling cars if you're looking for a job. I've given up trying to make economic predictions. And the problem is there's just too much information. And you have people like the Federal Reserve that intervene that even though your prediction could be right, if you have the Fed committed to pumping in money, creating money, note I didn't say print, but that's what they were doing for many years, they've stopped at least temporarily. I mention this for a reason. I think we're on the verge of another recession. I'm not predicting one, but I think it could happen. Canada's in recession. Many parts are in Europe are in recession. China's growth rate is dramatically declining. They might very well be in a recession. The problem is it's difficult to know exactly because the government's fiddled with the numbers. So the jobs report for September was a weak one. But the big weakness is in that labor participation rate of 62.4%. That's the lowest since 1977. That's 38 years ago. Now, what you need to understand, over periods of decades, the labor participation rate generally has gone up. I'm talking the overall rate. Now, if you break that down between men and women, the labor participation rate for men actually has gone down over time, while the labor participation for women have actually gone up. So there are a number of labor participation rates that are broken down by gender as well as age group. What we're talking about here is the overall labor participation rate. In a normal situation, that rate today should be somewhere between 66 and 67%. In other words, if the economy was doing well, if we were booming, we'd probably be over 67%. Now, what's happening? Now, one story you're going to hear is one of the reasons that the labor participation rate has gone down is more and more baby boomers are retiring. That's true. I'm on the leading edge, but I'm looking for a job as a nationally syndicated broadcaster. Right now, I'm practicing my communication skills, but I don't consider myself retired. A more correct description is I have retired from the financial services industry, and my goal right now, my immediate goal, is to find a full-time job broadcasting in commercial radio. You see, a lot of people in their 60s and 70s want to work. Many of them have to work, but many of them, even though they do have money set aside, simply want to be employed. They value work. They have an identity working. Now, they might not work as many hours as they used to, and they might very much switch careers, usually after many years in an industry or sector. But the explanation given by the advisors to politicians is, well, this is a structural change due to people retiring. I don't buy that. I think that's at best a partial explanation. Because when did these lower participation rates kick in? They kicked in when the economy went into a recession. And that started in December of 2007, and the recession ended in June of 2009. That's 6 years ago. And ever since that recession, the U.S. economy has been stagnating, and the labor participation rates are in the low 60s. You know, I might buy the argument if the labor participation rate were up between 65 and 66%. But I'm not buying that that's the explanation for these low rates. Now, one of the charts I've included is the quarter-to-quarter growth in real gross domestic product, GDP. And that's the sale of final goods to the consumer. It doesn't count or double count intermediate goods. These are final goods that consumers purchase. And the rates have been bouncing around. There have been some good quarters, and by good, I mean over 4%. But if you look at the entire history, especially from the recession that started through today, the economy in recent years has been growing somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 2.5%. Remember that number. The other number you need to remember is, historically, over many decades, the U.S. economy grows at 3%, 3.1, 3.2, 3.3, depending on what year you start and what year you end. The way to I would remember it, think 3%. That's normal. That's average. You want to be consistently in a recovery, which we're supposedly in. You want to consistently be above 3%. The problem is we haven't been. We've been below 3%. Yes, there have been quarters above 4, and yes, there have been quarters at 3, but most of the quarters have been at or below 2%. Just so happens, though, that the second quarter of this year, we're at 3.9%, and that was the third estimate, which is fairly good. You have an advance, second, and third estimate. However, the first quarter, it was revised several times. I have the bar chart. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but it was about 1%. Actually, I know it was below it. The problem is if you put those two numbers together, let's say it's 1%, we're still growing at less than 2.5%. And now we have this bad jobs report or weak jobs report and information on retail sales that are not encouraging. And remember, historically, the U.S. economy usually goes into recession every 5 to 7 years. We came out of the recession in we ended the recession of June of 2009. The economy started to recover in July of 2009. That's 6 years ago. So we're in the seventh year. We're somewhat overdue. So a lot of people are asking themselves, including me, are we going to be going into another recession in 2016? I don't know the answer. There's some indications that we might very well be. And we won't know, really, until the end of next year. But you got to look at trends. So I'm not encouraged by this jobs report, especially if you put it in a global context, what's happening in other countries. Because over time, what's happened to the U.S. economy, our export sector has expanded. Trade is more important, even though we've been running huge deficits. As the U.S. dollar is strengthened, what happens is it makes it more expensive for citizens of other countries to buy our goods. It also makes foreign goods cheaper for U.S. citizens, whether they be consumers or businesses. So you need to get the big picture and try to see what's going on. There are people predicting a recession in 2016. There are others that say no way. I don't know. But I keep looking for clues as to what might be happening. And retail sales is a big clue. Now, it could happen that in the last quarter, especially in November and December, Thanksgiving, as well as the run-up to Christmas, that the retail sales could recover. But that's a big unknown, because if consumers are lacking confidence, and that's the key, lacking confidence as to where the economy is going. In other words, we have uncertainty. They will cut back on their spending. They'll hold off. Maybe we better save the money because, honey, I might be unemployed. I might be laid off. I don't think I'm going to lose my job, but if sales don't pick up, maybe the business will lay off people. So what happens? And it's all a matter of confidence. People delay spending their money. Even if they have it, they delay. So stay tuned. But I want to put in context, briefly, what should we be looking for? And I've done this in past shows, but it's been a while since I've skipped several months in terms of the jobs report. If this economy was really growing like gangbusters, and it isn't, it's stagnating, folks. That's an objective analysis. We're not in a recession. We're not definitely not in a depression. We're not in a recession. But we're not growing above that 3% number. And we should be in a recovery. You should be growing at 4, 5, 6%. Now, that doesn't mean you can sustain that level of growth, but you should have many quarters of that, followed by starting to trend back to the 3%. We haven't really had that. And the reason is, I think, a combination of failed fiscal policy as well as monetary policy. By fiscal policy, I mean how much money the government is spending, as well as the taxes. Our tax burden in the United States has gone up, up, and up, thanks to President Obama and the Democrats. And we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. And you have a number of tax proposals by Republicans. I'm not going to get into which is best. I did that earlier in the week. But the thrust of all of them is to cut back the corporate tax rate from upwards of 39%, some companies even higher, back down to a lower range of maybe 15%, 20%, depending on whose proposal. If we went with the fair tax, which is my preference, there wouldn't be a corporate tax, so it would go down to zero. In other words, we would replace all income taxes, virtually all federal taxes, with a single consumption tax, a very broad-based consumption tax. But we need to be cutting not so much taxes, but the tax rates. And the biggest problem is for most middle-class people, They pay taxes, but their biggest tax by far is their payroll taxes for Social Security and Medicare. That's the lion's share. You see, if you compared all sources of taxes, personal income tax is usually number one. I don't know the most current number, but it's typically about 45% to 50%. Then you have Social Security at approximately 35%. It could be a little higher or lower. It's going to vary depending on where you are in the business cycle. But the number one and two taxes that people are paying is personal income taxes and Social Security taxes. If you add them together, over 80% of the taxes come from those two sources. Over time, corporate taxes have gone down in terms of the percentage of total revenues. But remember, corporations are really just collecting the tax because most of the taxes that they have to pay, they pass on in terms of the price of goods. Now, in some instances, they can't do that. But generally, that's true. So they're really collecting taxes from you when you go buy a good or service. Ultimately, it's the individual that pays the taxes. So don't get hung up on the fact that corporate income taxes, a percent of all the taxes that the government is collecting, has gone down over time. The individual, whether he's single, married with children, and unless you're making a lot of money, your biggest tax is the payroll tax. It's the middle class and the lower income that get hit hardest by Social Security and Medicare taxes because they're regressive. The burden is greater on those people. And that's one of the reasons I'm for the fair tax. All these tax plans, with the exception of Huckabee that is for the fair tax, while they cut income taxes, they don't really address the regressive nature of Social Security taxes. Now, Rand Paul, and I'm not going to get into Rand Paul's tax position. He does something about that. But the point I'm trying to make is this. Taxes definitely impact consumer spending on services, non-durable such as food and clothing, as well as durable such as buying a car, some major appliances, home. So we need fundamental tax reform, and that's part of fiscal policy to get this economy turned around. So as a general proposition, I like most, not all, but most of the tax proposals by all the candidates. They're going in the right direction, unlike the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party today is a far leftist party that wants to grow the size and the scope of government. They believe that the answers to society's problem is another law, another government program, and more taxes to pay for it across the board. That's what they're about. Who benefits? Why can they maybe get elected with that? Well, you have people that are dependent on government, and that's very, very dangerous because governments will fail you every time. If you really want to do right by yourself, as well as your family and children, the worst thing you can do is become dependent on the government for a check. I don't care if that's a welfare check, food stamps, Section 8 housing, are one of the many dozens of welfare programs. That is a dangerous trap. Try to avoid it at all cost. It's also a trap that older people can fall into as well because they get a Social Security check every month. Even if they've worked hard all their years, it usually can't keep them in the standard of living that they're used to unless they have saved for their retirement. You don't want to be dependent on the government. Down that road is serfdom, and that's the road that the Democratic Party and many Republicans are taking us, many Republicans, to make you dependent on the government so they can control you and force you to vote for them. Oh, you want an increase in your Social Security, your Medicare, your welfare check, Section 8 housing, the earned income credit? You better vote for me. I call it Santa Claus socialism, and that's what they're about. Don't fall for it, because ultimately you'll end up, you might have a good job, but you'll be spending 5, 6, 7 months of the year doing what? Working for the government and paying taxes, both payroll and income taxes. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, we have a federal government that's out of control in terms of spending, both in terms of so-called mandatory spending for entitlements and welfare programs, as well as discretionary spending for defense and the other federal departments. It's out of control because the federal government could not run without going into debt. Could not run. In other words, we're borrowing money every business day to pay for the massive deficits that both Republican and Democratic parties, administrations have given us. I consider it immoral because what are we doing? We're burdening future generations. I'm not against debt per se. If it's invested in items that are long-lasting, that also benefit those generations. But that's not what we're doing. We're largely going into debt to pay various costs of government that primarily benefits the people that are living today, but will burden your children, your grandchildren, and your great-grandchildren. Shame on them and shame on you for letting them get away with this. By the time President Obama leaves office, the national debt will be over $20 trillion, where $1 trillion, $1 trillion is $1,000 billion, and where $1 billion is $1,000 million. Most people, including me, can't comprehend that number. It's a huge number, but it's only the tip of the iceberg. What they never really mention is unfunded liabilities, primarily for Social Security and Medicare. It's unfunded because they can't pay the benefits. And it's over $100 trillion, six times. The number keeps going up, up, and up. Why? Because more and more the baby boom generation are retiring. There will be, I think within the next 10 years, maybe 15, but I really think about 10, unless some fundamental things are done soon. The debt time bomb will blow up. And what do I mean by that? The federal government, to pay its bills, has to borrow a lot of money. Who invests in treasury bills, notes, and bonds? Primarily financial institutions. Individuals, financial institutions. Mainly, up to not too long ago, it was Americans. Now we owe a lot of this money to foreign governments such as China and Japan, but they're waking up. They're looking at what's happening to the U.S. economy and the fact that both parties are living way beyond the means of the American people, that they're simply incapable of balancing the budget where there is no deficit. And forget about having a surplus. And it's going to get worse. And as that debt gets bigger and more interest has to be paid. And the people that invest in this, they're saying, listen, I want a higher risk premium. I'll invest my money with you only if you increase what you pay me in interest by 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 basis points, or in other words, percentage points. That's what happens to Greece, and it happens quickly. I'm not saying we're Greece now, but in 15 years, if we don't start doing something about it right now, we will be Greece. And then the interest rates will dramatically increase. And when that happens, the budget currently, interest is about 6% of the total budget. It'll go from 6% to 25% fairly quickly. Not in 1 year, but in several years. And what does that do? It starts to squeeze. And I mean really squeeze budgets. You see, you can either systematically, in an orderly way, deal with the problem, which they're not. They're not doing it. And you can see, or we will see by the end of this month, what the deficit was for the fiscal year that ended September 30th. I think it'll be somewhere between $500 and $600 billion, and probably closer to $600 billion. There is even a possibility it could go over that. Oh, yeah, that's a lot better than the first 3 years of the Obama administration, where it was over $1 trillion. And the trend is important, but you got to look to the future. And the future looks like it's going to go right back up to those levels. And if it does, this economy is headed for another recession. And what happens in a recession? Tax revenues plummet because people are not working. They're not paying Social Security taxes. They're not paying any taxes because they've been laid off. That's why I say you have to connect the dots. You have to get the big picture. You got to have a sense of where you are and where you could be heading, and you have to protect yourselves. and your families. And ultimately, we'll see it in the jobs report. Because if we go into another recession, whether it's 2016 or 2017, we'll go back to unemployment rates approaching and maybe even exceeding 10%. We're at 5.1, I believe, is the current unemployment rate. But that's very, very misleading. And the reason why it's misleading, it has to go back to that labor participation rate of 62.4%, which is the lowest since you have to go back 38 years to get there. You have nearly 95 million Americans that are not in the labor force. Now, I need to point something out because it's a real pet peeve of mine. There are a number of talk show hosts that make a big deal about that number. The September report says it was 94.6 million. Does that mean there are 94.6 million people that want to work? No, it doesn't mean that. You have people that want to stay home for various reasons. You have people that are retired. You have people that are raising a family, either a mom or a dad taking care of the kids while their spouse works. You have people that are going to school, college. So why that is a very high number, there's probably somewhere between 15 and 30 million, and you'll get a big debate amongst economists where it is, that would like to come back and work. They're discouraged workers. They're workers that simply cannot find a good-paying job because of this stagnating economy. So we got the October jobs report for September, and it was weak. We have to really pay attention to what's going to happen in the next 3 months. Because if this trend continues, and should retail sales not pick up, that has all the makings of a recession in the early part of 2016. And when a recession is technically two consecutive quarters of negative growth in GDP, and we've had negative growth. In 2014, we had first quarter negative growth. Now, you'll see some economists will say, well, we've always had a certain amount of problem with the first quarter. Well, that's just an alibi or an excuse. One quarter does not make a recession. Two quarters does, and the outfit that determines that is the National Bureau of Economic Research. It's a non-profit, non-partisan group, mainly of economists and statisticians. And they look at a number of things. But what they really focus in on is the real growth or lack of it in gross domestic product, as well as the unemployment numbers. Don't get the impression I'm hoping for a recession. I'm not. Like I said, I'm looking for a brand new career in commercial radio doing a national syndicated talk show. That's rather a long shot. But I've done a lot of listening to talk radio, both nationally and locally, and I think I'm talented enough to pull it off. There are not many people that can talk for 1, 2, or 3 hours, especially when, if you've noticed, we haven't had any call-ins because we're not equipped for call-ins, nor have we had any commercials. Now, I wish I did because it would enable me, for example, to take a drink or have a pause, but I have to talk for at least an hour on a regular scheduled show. And on our Friday shows, sometimes I can go 2 or 3 hours. Now, I'm looking at the clock. I really need to move on to the second story and give myself a little break. And this is about a tragedy on a community college campus. We're still getting the details. We know the latest information I have that 10 people have been killed and several others have been wounded. I've covered a number of these stories, and what I've learned is you can't rely on the information, especially the first 24 hours. We're a little bit beyond that 24-hour point, but we don't know much about the shooter. I've heard details, but I'm not going to speculate. I'm going to let the weekend see what happens during the weekend. There are a lot of reporters, as well as police agencies, looking into the background of what this person was all about. I've heard news reports that he had a number of weapons. Most were purchased, my understanding, legally. So our so-called gun control laws. Remember, this happened in Oregon. They have fairly strict gun laws. But more importantly, it was in a gun-free zone. And every time I've investigated these stories, as we get more details, you get some common denominators. Usually, they're young men. Not always, but usually. You see very few women. They're men. They're mentally disturbed. They're not normal human beings. They have issues. They are usually taking prescribed medication. In other words, they're being seen by a doctor for their mental problems. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Many of them plan what they're doing in detail. And because of the medication they're taking, many are suicidal. They want to commit suicide. They want to be forced to in a situation where they will finally take their lives or the police will kill them. Many of them are also homicidal. They have both suicidal and homicidal tendencies as a result of the drugs that they're taking, either because they didn't take their drugs or the dosage of the drugs was brought down or increased, and you have these side effects. I'm not going to give a show on that. I've done it in the past. What really got my attention, and I was preparing yesterday's show on Syria, and I was towards the end of my show prep, and then I saw on the screen in the newsroom President Obama giving a speech. And the sound was down. I didn't know what he was saying, but I said, I bet you it's about this mass shooting on a community college in Oregon. And I bet you he's going to lie about it, which he did. President Obama does not disappoint. He's very, very predictable. And like I said, if he could do away with the Second Amendment, he would do it. He thinks laws solve problems. They don't. They manifestly do not. And instead of protecting the innocent, law-abiding citizens, what he wants to do is take your weapons away. He believes it, even though that would make you defenseless. Now, the reason why we have a Second Amendment is to protect us against tyrants, dictators, that want to take your weapons away. That's the real purpose of the Second Amendment, is to allow the American citizens to bear and keep arms. Because the founding fathers knew if they didn't have their arms, they never could have revolted against the superpower at the time, and that was Great Britain. That's why they made sure that as part of the Bill of Rights, remember, it wasn't part of the original Constitution as drafted. There were 10 additional amendments that were ratified, principally to get the states to approve the Constitution, and they would not have done that without the Bill of Rights. And so the Second Amendment gives you, every American citizen, the right to bear and keep arms. Why it's important is that is a check, a very important check, on the president of this country. This president has broken laws, and I'm specifically talking about immigration law. He refuses to enforce within this country immigration law, even though he swore an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. He is betraying his oath of office. In other words, yes, government spending is out of control, but also who is out of control? It's the President of the United States. He's acting more and more like a petulant tyrant. Can't get his way. You see, the President wants more laws concerning guns. The problem is not guns. The problem is we have people, and it's all over the world, for various reasons, are suicidal or homicidal, usually because they're mentally disturbed and are taking prescribed drugs. Does that mean they all fall in this category? No. But where do these people go when they want to follow through and execute the plans that they develop? They go to gun-free zones. Gun-free zones. I'm sitting in one right now. Now, what do we use guns for? To protect people. We protect our president with guns, the Secret Service. We protect congressmen and women with guns. The Capitol Police carry guns. We protect our governors, celebrities usually hire their own securities to protect them. If you ever go to a sporting event, I'm sure you've seen in uniform people with guns, security, as well as people that you don't know that are also carrying guns that are there for your protection. We protect businesses such as jewelry stores, banks, office buildings, factories, And we also protect government buildings such as courts with guns. Guns are used to protect the innocent against criminals, as well as the mentally disturbed, those that are suicidal or homicidal maniacs. Yet what do we do? Do we protect our children with guns? Not really. What we do is we make our community colleges, our schools, gun-free zones. You've seen the signs, gun-free zone. That's like waving a red flag to criminals and these maniacs. This is a place I should go. If I want to kill people and in the process get myself killed, where should I go? Go to a gun-free zone. It's not hard to understand. Yet we have politicians and people that try to take advantage of this tragedy, and it is a tragedy. My heart goes out, as well as my prayers, to the families of those students that were killed as well as wounded. No one expected that day that going to the local community college would result in the deaths of their loved ones. But what did you expect? You made it a gun-free zone. There's a question that I'll ask you, and it's not original to me, but it's a question that John Lott asked. Would you put a gun-free zone sign in front of your house? I certainly won't. Why? That tells criminals, the bad guys, the evildoers, oh, this person doesn't have a gun. You're inviting criminals to break into your house, steal your stuff, and if you happen to be home, injure you or your family. No one in his right mind with common sense would do that. Yet we have politicians in the Democratic Party, as well as the Republican Party, that thinks the answer is to do away with the Second Amendment, and they know they can't do it. But until we can do that, in other words, confiscate guns, we need stricter gun laws. Ladies and gentlemen, the problem is not with the innocent and the law-abiding that need protection against evildoers and the insane or the people that are profoundly mentally disturbed or on drugs or alcohol. We need to protect them, and the way you protect them is with guns. Do you think our president would be alive today if the White House was truly a gun-free zone and the Secret Service did not carry guns? No, he wouldn't be. That would invite a terrorist or an assassin to take him out. And that's the hypocrisy of these people. The people that get on television, including the president and these politicians, they have protection, folks. They have more protection than the average citizen. But they want to disarm us. They want to make it difficult or highly expensive for us to get guns to protect ourselves, our family, and our property. And like I said, if they could get away with it, they would do away with the Second Amendment. That is their answer to what happened in Oregon. And every time there's a mass killing, they come out of the woodwork, usually before we even know who the killer is and what are the details, and argue we need more gun laws, stricter gun laws. Yet, if you look at the evidence, where do you have gun bans and strict gun laws? Chicago, where the president's from? How many murders, homicides were in Chicago last week, last month, Mr. President? You didn't seem to have a press conference on that. How many homicides, murders in Washington, D.C., Baltimore? That's what they never tell you. They would like you to think that because we have stricter gun laws, that's preventing violence. It's just the opposite. Where you have, for example, and in most states today you do, concealed carry, what happens? The incidence of homicides and violent crimes goes down. And they have been going down across this country. Now, the one place you get these mass shootings is a gun-free zone. It's a magnet. It's a big target. Oh, they don't have any guns here. It's not only the criminals, these suicidal and homicidal maniacs, it's also terrorists. They prefer gun-free zones. What they don't want is people having arms, such as pistols, that are concealed, that they don't know about, and will use to protect themselves and others. Take, for example, let's say you're in a lecture hall, on a college campus where you do have concealed carry. Now, there are not many colleges that do, but there are some. What does that mean? There's a high probability, I would say a certainty, 100%, if we're talking 100 people, that at least one person in that room has a concealed carry permit and is carrying his weapon, usually a pistol. It's probably almost a certainty that two people have a concealed weapon. Now, why is that important? If he's in a gun-free zone, he can't carry his weapon. But if he is on a college, university, community college that allows it, and someone walks in, like happened in Oregon, there's a chance, and I would say a fair to good chance, that that person with the concealed weapon will definitely protect him and try to protect others. And we would have fewer deaths and fewer wounded people. But instead, we have presidents of the United States, as well as many in the Democratic Party and some in the Republican Party, that think the answer is to take everyone's guns away. The criminals don't care about the gun laws. They break them all the time. They either steal them or buy them from other criminals. They know if they try to buy a weapon in a gun store, they probably can't pass the background check. There's something irrational about people that won't admit and won't look at the facts. Where you have gun bans or confiscation of weapons and gun-free zones, what happens? Homicides go up. They don't go down, they go up. And so do armed invasions. The criminals still have the guns, and they use the guns. The president talks about common sense. I wish he had some, because the common sense answer is to allow people, again with a background check, to conceal carry. Conceal carry works, and it saves lives, as does people in the home having weapons to protect their family and loved ones. Now, I want you to listen to what, and this is going to be hard for me because I really have real problems listening to the president, because I don't have time. I don't like to listen to known liars lie, and he's lying. I'll play the short one. I might play the long one if I have time, but here it goes.
As I said just a few months ago, and I said a few months before that, and I said each time we see one of these mass shootings, our thoughts and prayers are not enough. It's not enough. It does not capture the heartache and grief and anger that we should feel. And it does nothing to prevent this carnage from being inflicted someplace else in America. But we are not the only country on earth that has people with mental illnesses or want to do harm to other people. We are the only advanced country on earth that sees these kinds of mass shootings every few months. Somehow this has become routine. The reporting is routine. My response here at this podium ends up being routine. The conversation in the aftermath of it, we've become numb to this. It cannot be this easy for somebody who wants to inflict harm on other people to get his or her hands on a gun. And what's become routine, of course, is the response of those who oppose any kind of common sense gun legislation. Right now, I can imagine the press release is being cranked out.
Let me interrupt there, because he's lying. Where do we have the strictest gun laws? Chicago, D.C., New York? New York has had it for over a century. Has that stopped people using weapons to commit crimes? No, it hasn't. Oregon has very strict gun laws. You see, he's under the illusion that gun laws, stop people. They don't stop people. What would have stopped that killer in Oregon is some student or faculty or staff, either in that classroom or in the immediate vicinity, having on him his concealed weapon. Let me tell you something. I'm in a gun-free zone, and they do have police officers and surveillance cameras. It would take the police bare minimum 3 to 5 minutes to respond. And I'm being very optimistic about that 3 to 5 minutes. It might be 10 minutes because they're relying on someone reporting it. And initially, most people don't know what's going on. In 3 to 5 minutes, a well-armed person that is intent on killing people and committing suicide can kill more than 10 people. They could kill everyone in that classroom, and he could have. He killed those that supposedly said they were Christians. And if you didn't say that, he shot you in a leg or an arm. He planned this out. I don't know what his animus was against someone that is practicing and believes in a faith, whether it's Roman Catholicism, being a Baptist, a Methodist, Presbyterian, Christian, or any other religion. But this is a mentally disturbed fanatic that planned and executed these people. No gun law is going to stop that. What would have stopped it is a person armed that could resist and could try to defend these people against evil. And what really annoys me is this president is well defended 24/7 by the Secret Service. All of them are armed. Oh, yes, the White House is a gun-free zone, but he has the luxury, being president, to be protected by, in every single second of the day, armed agents of the Secret Service. To a lesser extent, that applies to governors, and to a lesser extent, our representatives in Congress and state legislatures. And you better believe the very wealthy celebrities that can afford it, and most people cannot afford it, have security not as elaborate as the president's or a governor or another high official. You see, the people, and remember, he works for us. Citizen is the most important position in the United States. Not president, not representative or senator. It's citizen. We hire them and we fire them. And I'm tired of this preachy, hypocrite liar telling us what we should do when he doesn't have a clue how to prevent what's going on. The first step is to do away with gun-free zones and do away with bans. Allow people to arm themselves if they want to. You don't have to. Many people won't. I understand that. That's your choice. That's your right. But you should be allowed to defend yourselves. And what he's up to is try to confiscate, grab your guns. That's what he's about. What annoys him is he can't do it. He knows he can't do it. He's trying to do it. He didn't wait for the bodies to be cold to get on television to press his gun-grabbing agenda. And he's lying about it. In other nations, oh yes, they've banned guns. They've confiscated guns. And what happens? Two things happen. The killing continues. These criminals, they don't care about the law. They have the weapons. They invade houses. Crime rate goes up. The killing goes up. The violent crimes goes up. And it's really, in most countries, not democratic countries, not countries with representative government, where the rule of law is important. But in the majority of countries today, there are tyrants and dictators. And what do the tyrants and dictators? They go after the people's guns because they don't like dissent. They don't like political opposition. They don't like people telling the president, no, you don't. You go after my gun and you have a problem, sir. And he does have a problem. It's no accident that the American people understood that we have a gun-grabbing president and attorney general whose agenda ultimately was to do away with the Second Amendment. And to do that, he takes step after step after step that ultimately leads to that. You're looking at a tyrant in the making, and the American people are not going to be fooled by his lies. What would have stopped or at least prevented many of those people being killed and wounded yesterday was someone in that classroom or nearby with a gun that could defend and kill that suicidal, homicidal maniac. Not another law, Mr. President. You know, he's a Harvard lawyer that thinks that the law is the answer. It's not. Criminals don't care about the law. I care about the law. The law-abiding care about the law. And we want to protect ourselves and our loved ones. First from the criminals, but more importantly, from people in elective office that are trying to do away with our freedoms and rights. And that's what he is about. And he's trying to make this emotional appeal. And people fall for this because most people simply don't follow politics. I followed this gentleman, and early on in 2008, it became very apparent this gentleman has a problem telling the truth. He does. He will look at you and lie. If you don't believe me, Google or go to YouTube the lies of President Obama. There are many and often. I've lost count. He's an habitual liar. Now let me continue the rest of this clip.
We need more guns, they'll argue. Fewer gun safety laws. Does anybody really believe that?
Yes, I do.
There are scores of responsible gun owners in this country. They know that's not true. We know because of the polling that says the majority of Americans understand we should be changing these laws, including the majority of responsible, law-abiding gun owners. There is a gun for roughly every man, woman, and child in America. So how?
He's arguing for gun safety laws. Would this have stopped that killer? No, it wouldn't have. Do you think a criminal or a homicidal or suicidal maniac cares about gun safety laws? This is nonsense. This is rubbish. We need more gun safety laws? I believe in gun safety. I believe in training. I believe if you own a gun, you should go regularly and shoot it to become proficient, because you're not going to have time when someone's breaking in to become proficient. And if you rely on the police to protect you, you'd be dead. Because of the time they arrive, you don't have a gun and the criminal does, pray. Because if he's homicidal, he'll kill you. This is not about having gun safety laws. Anyone that owns a gun knows the importance of handling weapons safely. Now let me continue.
How can you, with a straight face, make the argument that more guns will make us safer?
Yes, they will, if the people that have those guns can legally carry them into gun-free zones, such as on college campuses, and unfortunately many retail stores don't allow you to carry your concealed weapon in. It's not going to do you any good if your gun is in your glove compartment of your car and someone decides to go into a gun-free zone, whether it's a mall, a theater, a college, or government building.
We know that states with the most gun laws tend to have the fewest gun deaths.
That is a lie. The states that have concealed carry or open carry tend to have less crime. It's the states that have and the cities that have, such as, look at Washington, D.C., Baltimore, and Chicago. Again, he lies to make his case. He has to lie because he knows all the evidence is on the other side. If you don't believe me, I have a video. Remember I mentioned my first radio show was on the day that we had a mass shooting, and this was several years ago, at the University of Texas. Well, it just so happens, this is a coincidence, that John Lott, who's an expert on this subject, was scheduled to give a presentation at the University of Texas. And he did. And I have that video on in my notes. I have several by John Lott. And let me see if I can pick out the one I'm looking for. I'm not automatically finding it, but he gave a speech that day. Oh, here it is. No, take it back. Anyway, one of the videos that John Lott is in, and I did include it, was from that day, and he goes over the evidence of both gun bans as well as gun-free zones. And what he found, that really one of the few things that stop these people is the fact that you have concealed carry in many states. In other words, people are armed. legally and have a concealed carry permit, have gone through a background check, and have been trained. Now, do I think it's enough training? No. You need to become proficient with the weapons that you're using. You see, this president will use every time this happens to try to push his agenda. He's politicizing this literally within hours of the event without knowing anything or very little about who the killer is. And I'm waiting to see the details about that. I've heard some details. I'm not repeating them yet because I've seen this. Sometimes you get the details correct. Sometimes you don't. You don't know who to believe. So that's our president. I can't really listen to him anymore. I have a number of videos. One is a documentary about Obama's real reason he wants your guns. Ladies and gentlemen, the real reason he wants your guns is to control you. He wants you to be dependent on government, be dependent on the police. Don't depend on the police. They might be busy when you truly need them, and you'll end up dead. Or I have to shut the program down. Just got the signal. So I urge you to spend a little time getting informed. And the best thing I can do is I've given you that documentary as well as a number of video clips by John Lott. And he's an expert on this subject and will give you the honest evidence of what really needs to be done and what really prevents this type of violence. And one of the things to do is to do away with gun-free zones and allow concealed carry, the people that have concealed carry permits, to carry their weapon anywhere, including a college campus such as Richland College. With that, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.